Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast.
Coming to you from the Baseball America Podcast nook.
Controls your throwing strikes. The command is you're hitting the spot.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. I'm going to rant about this again because that's just stupid, John.
This is
so ridiculous. I'm tired of it.
If he was in the home run derby, I'd put him out of a decent chance of winning it against the big leaguers.
Surprised you could even hear us over the din of Ronnie McCabe's tape gun.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Play ball.
Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College Podcast, along with Aaron Fitt and my laptop. I'm John Manuel. Don't forget to subscribe to Baseball America's draft offer. Subscribe now and receive one extra month of access with any premium content subscription. That's at baseballamerica.com/subscribe. And Aaron, we have a lot of college baseball coverage coming up. Our postseason coverage is sponsored by DeMarini. Visit DeMarini.com to see the 2014 lineup of DeMarini BB Core bats, including the CF6 with D-Fusion handle technology. Visit DeMarini.com. That is, once again, the CF6 with D-Fusion handle technology. I'm excited about the D-Fusion 6. The CF6 with D-Fusion handle technology.
Easy for you to say.
It's not. Absolutely not. But, Aaron, there are a couple things that stand out today on this Memorial Day weekend. And we thank those of you listening and those of you who have family members who served over the years. First of all, Aaron, Memorial Day, sadly for us, means working and college baseball. That's what it means to us. But it's an exciting day from that standpoint. Often it has meant moaning and screaming even about the injustice of the Division I Baseball Committee. Even though there is a lot of parity in college baseball area and a lot of mediocrity, I would say a lot of mediocrity more than parity. Even though there's a lot of that, it really did seem like things kind of sorted themselves out during conference tournaments. There wasn't a lot of difference between the people who actually pay attention and who they thought the top 8 national seeds would be and who the 64 team field would be. Is that because the committee's predictable? Is that because this really did sort itself out? Was there a defined 64? Because it feels like it should have been harder with all this muddle.
Yeah, you're right. And, I have to acknowledge Kendall Rogers and I had the same 64 teams. And I think 63 of them got it. We had the same national seeds.
Must have had the same bad source about Clemson.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think as of Saturday afternoon, I think Clemson was maybe, or Sunday afternoon, I think Clemson maybe was in trouble. But, they revised those things over the course of the night. So I don't know
right.
if their opinions changed or what. But I will say this. I had Clemson in Saturday night. I mean, I thought when you break it down, It was a coin toss between Clemson and UCF and UC Irvine, and I had Illinois right in that discussion. I guess the committee had Illinois a little bit farther back, not in their next four teams.
Somewhat surprising. What it really made you think, Aaron, as you looked at it, was their last four out being listed as what? West Virginia, USC, Mercer,
UCF.
It really made you think that, boy, Mercer and West Virginia, they were the two teams that really fouled the bed the most down the stretch, you would say, in that those two teams had a high RPIs, and those fit the committee template of the kind of teams they want in. They want some new blood. Did Mercer not win the Atlantic Sun regular season?
He finished in second.
So that's because of their late collapse. They won the Atlantic Sun regular season. You got to think they probably would have gotten in, but both the
They lose their last two series. West Virginia gets swept in its last two series. The momentum is a factor here, especially if you're a team that finished,
sixth place in
the Big 12 and 9-14 in the league. 6-19 is the top 50. There are a lot of metrics working against West Virginia. They didn't need to do a lot to get in, but they didn't meet that bare minimum threshold.
You're just looking at them down the stretch, and you're like, boy, the 2-1-run losses at Texas Tech, a 1-run loss to finish the series at Kansas.
Some heartbreakers. I watched several of those games, and they were right there, and then that's talking to Terry Rooney today, and he was very gracious, UCF's coach. I mean, he said, hey, we had a nice season, but we had some opportunities we didn't take advantage of, and for them, there's really a lot of 1-run losses, and That's college baseball in the BB Corps era.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of 1 and 2 run games, and so the line between being very good and very bad or average can sometimes be very thin. But the really good teams are the ones that have that extra, ability to win those close games, whether it's because they have strong bullpens, whether it's because they're very good on defense, whether right. they just have a knack for timely hitting. There is something to be said for being able to win those games.
You just described Georgia Tech in a nutshell as a team that just jumps out to me as a program that has kind of remade itself in this BB Corps era. It's not that they're bunt happy or that kind of thing, but their two best pitchers are Dusty Isaacs and Sam Clay, and they're in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And Dusty Isaacs winds up being your ACC tournament MVP. Sam Clay is going to be their highest drafted player. You think of Georgia Tech, usually you think of prospects. Their best prospect is a left-handed reliever who walks 4.5, 5 per 9 innings, but he does have really good stuff. And they're all freshmen, but it's a very different Georgia Tech team in that their best player in the field, for me, is Connor Justice, their shortstop. Maybe Matt Gonzalez in left field, but in the BB Corps era, Matt Gonzalez has to be an outfielder because he's just not good enough defensively on the infield. Whereas in the Beezer Bat era, Matt Gonzalez would have had 15, 20 home runs. He played third base. He had lived with the 890 fielding percentage because he mashed.
Yeah.
And you just can't do it anymore. And you have to give a lot of credit to Georgia Tech as a team that has made that adjustment. There are other ones, but I guess I'm being provincial, Aaron, and I'm thinking about it from the ACC perspective because that's where I live. But, so sue me. I'm salty today. I just got to warn
you
all.
I'm
freaking salty. I can't help it. My back hurts. I can't help it. Aaron, I'm going to start with the top 8 national seeds. It seemed like there was no surprise, I guess the biggest quote-unquote news in the top 8 national seeds. A, Oregon State, still the number 1 national seed despite losing that series to Southern Cal the last weekend of the year. It seemed like Florida had the number 1 resume. Virginia had the number 1 RPI, but stumbled the last couple weeks. Were you surprised that Oregon State was the number 1? Because wasn't the Pac-12 only the number 3 RPI league?
Or 4. I think 4. They were 4. Yeah, I was a little surprised that Oregon State beat out Virginia and Florida and Indiana. I mean, frankly, Florida especially. That's the one that, to me, was the obvious number 1 choice.
If Florida had won the SEC tournament, I got to think regular season SEC plus conference tournament SEC plus this great RPI equals number 1 national seed.
I can't get over the fact that Florida's 23-14 against the top 50.
Wow.
No other team in the country that I can see has more than 17 wins against the top 50. So that's 6 more wins against the top 50 than anyone else. They're 3rd in the RPI. They won the SEC by a couple of games. And they reached the championship game in the tournament. I mean, that's a strong resume. How are they not number 1 seed? Oregon State had a great year, but 13-5 against the top 50 versus 23-14.
That's a big difference.
Florida won the number 1 RPI conference and sent 10 teams to regionals. They won it comfortably in the regular season. How is that not the number 1 seed?
I'm flummoxed. I was surprised. See, I know I tease a little bit of your criticism out of here. The committee,
there it is.
You're too nice to the committee. You did predict that TCU would be a top 8 national seed and LSU. So you wavered a little bit Sunday night and maybe thinking that TCU wouldn't be, that they'd earned it, but they wouldn't get it. There'd be a 3rd SEC team. It seems like Miami backing up with a poor week during the ACC tournament, combined with the fact that the other SEC teams that really had could stake the claim to being a top 8 national seed, specifically Vanderbilt, which I'm surprised they mentioned as a contender, South Carolina, and then Ole Miss. All 3 of those teams combined to go, 2-6 in
that
Hoover?
That sounds about right. Yeah, they
They all went 1-2 or 0-2.
That's right. South Carolina made its usual 0-2, which we can usually count on. You got your South Carolina Garnet on today.
I didn't even realize
bias
that.
Bias for the Gamecocks.
I did. I saw it. Maybe it's because when we were walking around the farmer's market this weekend, there was a dude walking around in a South Carolina football jersey with a giant spur and, the talon on one sleeve. And on the back where the name would go, it just said Cox.
Nice.
So, stay classy, South Carolina fan at the Raleigh Farmers Market.
To your point, those teams, that last national seed was kind of there for the taking. And I kind of felt like it would come down to the SEC tournament. There was so little separation between South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss.
And then LSU,
LSU was behind all those teams heading into the week. And they did blow past them all. And I do think it's not just because They went 4-0 in the SEC tournament.
Because you pointed out, Aaron, if you go a little bit beyond that, they didn't face a weekend starter.
In four games, they did not face a weekend starter this week.
So you weren't as impressed by the as the committee apparently was by LSU. You're not saying they didn't deserve it, but that in itself didn't do it for you.
Right. I mean, and I had them as a national seed anyway. But, you know, and partly it's because of the factoid that I heard today on the broadcast. In their last eight games, they've outscored their opponents 80-something to, I don't know, eight. I mean, something crazy.
Hashtag dominance.
It's insane. And yeah, that 27-0 no-hitter skews it a little bit. But
a bit.
But, I mean, they've crushed
TFCO, Northwestern State.
Yeah, they've crushed everybody in the last couple of weeks. And they really, really passed the eye test. Hey, they did finish as the third seed in the SEC. And they have a lot of quality wins. They end up with as many top 50 wins as those other teams, 15 or even 16, I think they got to.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think in the end they separated themselves in the last couple of weeks from that other group of teams. I think momentum matters. And, you know, it's not just 1 week. It's a couple of weeks now.
Right.
They have momentum.
I tell you, Mark Laird has come on for them. I mean, just a lot of guys offensively. Obviously, Bregman gets all the attention. But Laird has come on for them.
Yeah, he's dynamic.
I mean, McMullen obviously had the big hit yesterday, but today now they have, it's not like they have one power guy here, and they have like three or four guys. And that's what I was talking to a lot of Pac-12 coaches lately because of draft coverage. And it just feels like out there, most teams have one or two guys who can hit home runs off you. And that's one thing that separated UW in that league was that it's only two, a lot of guys with two or three, but there are six or seven guys in the lineup who are a threat. So this is certainly not a gorilla ball LSU team, 38 home runs, which is a respectable amount these days. But it's more the fact that they have some threats up and down their lineup. They have some threats in terms of speed, and they have some threats in terms of power. And then I guess the shocking thing, Aaron, is just how good their pitching has been. Clearly, Nola and Poche get all the attention, and they deserve it. They've both been outstanding. But 17 shutouts, where does this come from? Who are the other guys who, if you haven't watched a lot of LSU this year, who've helped them with those 17 shutouts?
Well, Kyle Bowman is the number three starter, and he, he's healthy again, and he's been pitching well down the stretch, and he's just kind of a solid pitchability guy that doesn't blow you away but throws strikes. And then the bullpen, I mean, Joe Broussard at the back, that's really a key guy. They'll piece a lot of games together with their bullpen. They have several guys in there that they trust.
Person.
They have several pieces. You know, I think there's actually some depth in that bullpen, and Broussard is up to 95 in the back. And
I know the collegiate baseball folks give a pitching coach of the year award. I'm gonna nominate Alan Dunn right now.
Yeah.
Because this was a team that it just felt like the whole issue with them preseason was just how good and how deep would their pitching be, Aaron. And it's gone from being a question mark or maybe even a liability to a significant asset.
Yeah.
And I mean that's what a coach is supposed to do. You know, and they've done it this year.
And I love the fact, and I asked Paul Mineri about this week, that their best teams over the years, 08, 09, you know, these Omaha teams, they always peak late, you know, and it's not just in obviously
point.
They have to peak in the NCAA tournament, but going into the tournament, they build momentum. They had that huge winning streak, I think, in 2008 when they kind of broke through unexpectedly.
Right.
You know, and Mineri said, well, you know, that's
it's usually a lineup change. You know, he has this little spark player that he plugs in and they take off.
But, you know, his point was, you know, that comes from his days when he was coaching Notre Dame in the North. And you know when you're a Northern coach that you're going to be playing better late than you did early just because of the weather and the travel and all that stuff. So you kind of expect it. So you tell guys early in the season, take your lumps, hang in there. You keep them positive. You build them up. And you just expect to play better in May than you do in March. And he's taking that same mindset to LSU. And he never, you know, panics if they get off to a slow start. And he's a great coach. And Alan Dunn's a great pitching coach. And, you know, Javi Sanchez doesn't get the credit he deserves either.
Good point.
Those guys are good.
All that guy's done is recruit. And that team has gotten better offensively this year. So kudos to that coaching staff, no doubt. Aaron, and the hosts, I guess this is ground we have plowed before, but we did talk about Washington. It sounds like a lot of people thought that UW would be a host either as a one or a two seed, maybe even as a two seed, send Houston with its high RPI there as a one seed.
Yeah.
The committee did not choose to do that, obviously. Houston was a two seed, and it's going to LSU, not Rice, which would make some sense. And we'll get into those in just a second, but this is kind of the last big picture. I mean, the West, we see it on our website in the comment section all the time. Pac-12 fans and West fans get their panties in a wad over being I had the father of Bishop, what's Bishop, the center fielder at UW. His dad was
Bishop.
Yeah, his dad was bitching at me last night on Twitter about it, and the Pac-12 getting boned again. Does he use that because of they're the Huskies? And I don't know, but either way.
And to quick aside here, you know, there's, for the sake of equal opportunity here, there's a lot of panties in a wad on their website, not just from West people.
Great point.
There's SEC people who do that. There's,
absolutely.
You know, mid-major fans. I mean, people all over the country. But certainly the West people have,
it's a consistent
had a huge chip on their shoulder.
It's just the same chip. That's the difference. It's the same chip. But do they have a point this year that this is the first time since 2004 that there are only fewer than three hosts west of the Rockies? Did you feel that Washington should have hosted, not for geographic balance, but because they earned it?
They were right in the discussion. I mean, you know, and it's not a slam dunk for them or for Louisville or for Houston, which for me are the last three teams.
Right.
And they were, I guess, along with Texas for the committee as well. The committee also said that they had Oklahoma State as one of the last teams in that hosting match, which I think is crazy.
How are they not one of the first teams into the hosting match?
I mean, that's got to be a slam dunk. I don't get that. But
their non-conference schedule must have been in there, because you kept on talking early in the year how their RPI was really scuffling.
Which, you know, again, not to get too sidetracked, but I mean, you play a series against San Diego and, what, Arizona State?
That should be good enough.
Those are two quality series wins. I don't care if you played a couple of cream puffs. You play two really good series against, you know, consistent regional caliber West teams. You're rewarded for that, not penalized. But anyway, they won.
That's good. You're right.
They hosted, which they deserve to, obviously. But, you know, trying to sort out those other teams, I mean, heck.
You stick them in a hat, basically.
You stick them in a hat. And you know, the point that Dennis Farrell made on the conference call today was, Washington's strength of schedule was 2-14, non-conference.
Right.
Non-conference strength of schedule. And that killed them. And, you know, Louisville was 86, not great. Houston's non-conference strength of schedule was 7. But you can't really justify, I don't think you can justify Houston over Louisville, because Louisville swept that series
right.
in Houston, won the regular season by 4.5 games over Houston. So I'm perfectly fine with Louisville hosting over Houston. And
I'll just say, who else is Washington supposed to play, though?
Who else?
There are seven Division I teams in the states of Oregon and Washington.
Yeah.
And then if you want to expand to Idaho and Montana and Wyoming, there's no Division I baseball out there, Aaron.
And
they have no one to play unless they're going to spend a ton of money.
If you look at their first couple of weeks, not to interrupt, John.
Right, but no, they tried.
Michigan and
yep.
Texas State. And Michigan, they played three of their first four games. Those are quality programs.
Indiana,
Nebraska, Michigan State, Oregon State non-conference. I mean, the first two weekends, those are quality opponents. And then, yeah, you got some West teams that are probably farther down with UC Davis. You know, Santa Clara had a good year, as it turned out, but...
Right, those aren't powerhouse clubs in Davis, Santa Clara, San Jose State, Pacific, but it's not like they didn't make the effort.
Right.
And then once they get into conference play, they basically have to play Seattle. They have to play teams from the West.
Yep.
And they don't have a choice.
Seattle,
and basically,
Portland.
Basically what killed them, Aaron, is their one weekend out of conference in Pac-12 play, they played Bethune. And you just memo to Coach Meggs and the rest of that coaching staff, don't do that again. Just don't do it. Go back and read Aaron's column. And sad to say, until the committee shows some feel and stops penalizing teams for playing SWAC and MEAC teams, don't schedule a SWAC or MEAC team.
Because
you get penalized from it. It costs their baseball program money, and now they have to go fly to Oxford, Mississippi for a tough regional. Otherwise, they could have been a host. What if that non-conference series against Bethune, pulling one out of my head, what if that was a Big West team?
What if the game just got canceled?
That's it. If they got canceled, they'd be better off.
And then the great example of that, we were talking about this before the podcast, is Columbia versus College of Charleston. If you look at those two,
this is
strength of schedule and RPIs.
This is a great way to talk about what was brought up on the conference call and was tweeted about. Why does Miami have, why does Florida have a higher national, top eight national seed? Number two, why do they have College of Charleston as their four and Miami has whoever their four?
Bethune. Number 207.
So when you really add it up, Florida has a harder, really much harder regional field than Miami does, and this is what explains it.
Although, to be
fair,
Bethune-Cookman, you know, has an ace,
right.
Montana Duropo, who, you know, that's not an easy draw. But that said, I mean, on paper, you know, College of Charleston should have been a 3 seed for me anyway, but their non-conference strength of schedule
It was like 177.
That's right, for College of Charleston. And 179.
179.
Whereas Columbia, which got a 3 seed in Coral Gables, non-conference strength schedule of 10. Now, the key thing here is that you brought up was Columbia's only played 47 games.
So they have nine games under their maximum allowed.
So if you replace those 9 games with whatever games you can get.
What if they played 9 games against Bethune, Mississippi Valley, and Arkansas Pine Bluff?
Or just, you know, the teams that...
Or Siena.
The teams that College of Charleston played to get to 56.
Yeah, Rhode Island.
You're playing Charleston Southern, you're playing Rhode Island, you're playing even Coastal Carolina. You know, supposed to be a good team, did not have a good RPI.
Or just the ones that are from the north, like Marist and Rhode Island are two northern teams that Columbia would maybe play 3-game series against.
Those teams killed College of Charleston in the RPI. So you're saying you're better off just playing 47 games?
Right.
I hate that message.
I hate the message. And they're basically you're really punishing College of Charleston for playing like Citadel and Coastal because they had bad years. And they're close by. USC Upstate, you're penalizing them for playing those games. That message is the wrong message. And it really does take somebody on the committee really going through and saying, huh, why does Columbia have a 38 RPI? And yeah, they played Texas. Good for them. They played a bunch of games on the road. Awesome. But they also are 9 games they didn't play, and realizing how if they just played 9 games, just plug it in. Plug it into your spreadsheet and say, what would happen if they played 9 more games against teams that are, what's the midpoint of the RPI?
150.
150. What would that do to their RPI? Oh, we'll probably put them below College of Charleston. And then you have to, I just think there's a lack of feel shown there. Hey, we're getting really nitty-gritty, but guess what? That's what the RPI report's called. The committee's supposed to get into the nitty-gritty, Aaron, and they kind of didn't here. And Charleston, like you said, deserved a 3 seed, not a 4. It's almost like they forced them to be a 4 seed because they could bust to Gainesville, and they forced Columbia up as a 3 because they were going to fly them anyway. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
So that is what we're on the Baseball America College podcast. He's Aaron. I'm John. I'm going to find my read. I'm going to give you one more read here because I like to do reads. Don't forget Baseball America's draft offer. Subscribe now and receive 1 extra month of access with any premium content subscription. Go to baseballamerica.com/subscribe. Aaron, we're going to take you through the regionals now. We're going to kind of do a quicker preview of the regionals. Aaron and I have a lot of draft work to do, so we don't get the 3-hour podcast this year. We apologize, but such is life. C'est la vie. Why don't we start up here with the O-State Ballers? Are you okay with that one?
Yeah, and let's just, you know, and we've got 53 minutes here, so it's going to have to be just a couple of minutes per regional rather than...
Aaron, the big news to me in Corvallis is that UC Irvine made the regional field. They were backing in. You wrote about it when you talked to Coach Gillespie a couple weeks ago. They were a backloaded schedule, and they knew that was going to be the tougher part of their schedule, and they struggled a little bit with it. They get in. Are any of these teams really a threat? It doesn't feel like North Dakota State, Irvine, or UNLV, minus Eric Fetty, are threats to win this regional.
The Fetty factor to me is important. You know, kudos to UNLV for hanging in there without Fetty.
Right.
They reached the Mountain West Championship game this week, lost to San Diego State. But, you know, they're still a tough team without him. I mean, with John Ritchie is a good number one guy. I like some of the other arms on their staff. You know,
it's basically a 3-man staff, though, at this point, Aaron. When you really dig into the numbers, after Fetty, it's Oakley, Bonnell, and Ritchie. Those are the only 3 guys with more than 40 innings pitched all year who are healthy. Everybody else, you know, you're talking about Joey Loria or Cody Roper or some of these other guys. These guys were not insignificant roles. I did a radio show in Nevada
last
week.
Brandon Torres is the other guy, though, that I don't know if you mentioned him, but he's
out of their bullpen,
out of their bullpen, sorry. Yeah, I mean, a left-hander.
Who's had a nice year. Kind of their closer.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys who's like, you know, a little like a Ken Emanuel mold where it's, you got angle, fastball plays up because of that, some funk, and good changeup.
Those are the guys who are going to have to step forward. He's the guy because you can't win a regional with 3 pitchers unless they all throw a deal. So that's my concern with UNLV. It's just pitching depth. Not knocking Tim Chambers here. They didn't need to go much more than 4 or 5 deep all year.
And then you lose Fetty. But then
you lose Fetty, and you're just shortened up. So it's going to be really tough.
Good,
I think
good matchup though with John Ritchie and Andrew Morales in that opener. But then I feel like you don't have a big gun to take on the Beavers, who I assume are going to beat North Dakota State. The Beavers waltz here.
I agree. They waltz. Wetzler joke of the day.
So, all right.
Moving on. Stillwater. First of all, I think we can guarantee, I'm not knocking it again, but I guess I am. You called this ballpark a dump earlier in the year. So Ali P. Reynolds Stadium will be on display on Bases Loaded. Watch the Bases Loaded on ESPN. Tell us if you agree that Ali P. Reynolds Stadium is a dump.
Those faded orange 30-year-old bleachers are going to look great on TV.
But this is like this is a tough regional. This might be the toughest regional area because Oklahoma State's legit. Deep pitching staff, deep lineup. Not a team of stars, but a team of grinders. Good. Stars are in the dugout and the coaching staff here.
Yeah.
Number 2 seed Nebraska, whose future is, this is like a tune-up for Nebraska to be the next Big 10 team. That's a preseason top 10 club.
Maybe
Darren
so.
Darren Erstad's club is on the come. And huge kudos to Husker Nation. Are coming out during the Big Ten tournament at TDAPO. Almost 20,000 people on the championship game Sunday. Just watching that on Big Ten Network all week was awesome. I mean, I just loved seeing their fans come out.
It was really fantastic, and I knew they were going to draw big for that.
But that big?
That was awesome.
Epic. So Nebraska's your 2 seed, and then one of the best stories of the last month, Cal State Fullerton, from disaster to disaster to disaster all year. With like one good weekend, Oregon, then they suspend Coach Vanderhook. It seems like they're just completely out of it. Their fans are apoplectic, and then all of a sudden, it just snaps right into place.
The day Vanderhook returned to the dugout, John, they haven't lost since.
That's crazy.
I mean, they sweep UC Irvine, they win a midweek game, against USC, I think, and they sweep Northridge. Boy, I don't want to play those guys right now. I mean, they got a little bit of that mojo going. Hey, preseason top 5 team. They're obviously dangerous. I mean, with Justin Garza, to me, that's the key.
That is the key. Garza's injury just seemed like they had, hey, look, they had a funk offensively. They've never really hit their stride offensively, which that is Vanderhook's whole identity as a coach from a skill perspective is his toughness that he instills in players, but also the skill it up, the offensive ability that he coaches in players. That's his reputation.
Sure.
Their offense was struggling, and as he's trying to find the right button to push, he gets suspended. Garza's hurt. So even with all their pitching, they still are not playing with a lot of life, not playing with a lot of energy, sloppy defensively, and not enough offense. And it just seems like it's all clicked in the last 3 weeks.
And then, you know, Garza threw the no-hitter and struck out 12 against Northridge.
Aaron, correct me if I'm wrong, they're the most talented team in this regional, aren't they? Or would you say that's Nebraska?
No, I still think it's Fullerton. And because of the arms, you know, obviously with Garza, Eshelman, Bickford, and Wiest, and then, you know, hey, they've got bullpen guys. You still have 2 stars with Chapman and J.D. Davis. And I like the fact that they're battle-tested. They've gone on the road to Baylor. They've gone on the road to Wichita State. Traveling to Stillwater. They're not going to be intimidated by it. I don't know who I'm picking. Do you know who you're picking? Are we making
picks
on this
Fullerton
podcast?
I'm picking Fullerton. I'm telling you, Matt Chapman's hot. You know, someone needed to step forward and be the guy for this offense. He has been a little bit banged up, too, but he says that he's become the guy. I mean, I'm taking Fullerton. All due respect.
I'm taking Fullerton, too. Binghamton, by the way, kind of a pesky 4 seed that has a lot of veterans on their team. They were in a regional last year.
I was about to say, they seem like that's just a solid program.
Yep.
They're competitive every year. Hey, you know, you can't compare Binghamton to, you know, teams in the Southeast. You compare Binghamton to the teams around them who are there competing with four recruits. Binghamton seems like every year they're in the thick of this. They're almost always, it feels like, toward the top of their conference.
Yeah.
In their conference tournament. For me, that's just a program that I wish I knew a little bit more about. But they're pesky. It really feels like Coach... Is it Sinicky? Is that how it's pronounced? He's been there for 20 years. He seems like he knows what he's doing. The thing is, he's been the coach for half as long as Tony Rossi's been at Siena. Less than half as long as Tony Rossi's been the coach at Siena. I wish that were a great segue, but it's not. Siena's not in the next regional. So we're both picking the Titans here, Aaron.
Yeah, you know, and this is a great regional. Really,
it is.
I really like Nebraska's team. Really like Oklahoma State's team.
I agree.
But I think Fullerton has the pitching to shut down either of those offenses, and they're swinging the bats better. So there it is.
Hashtag on a roll.
Yep.
I'll stop saying that.
Thanks.
Any hashtags? Thank you. The Houston regional, Aaron, is the one that will sell out first. Reckling Field. Is it Reckling Field
Reckling
or Reckling Park?
Park?
Thank you, Reckling Park. Number 1 seed Rice, champions of the Conference USA. Don't they win the conference championship every year since 1996? Is there 1 year they missed out?
Nope. They've always had at least a share of a regular season or conference tournament.
That's just incredible. That is such consistency out of Wayne Graham.
Yeah.
Number 2 seed Texas, which was really kind of on the cusp of being a 1, it felt like, but didn't quite get a number 1 seed. Number 3 seed Texas A&M. Number 4 seed George Mason. George Mason, the only team that was not in the Southwestern Conference. Now, the Southwestern Conference disbanded after 1996. 4 teams went to be the Big 12. We made the Big 8 the Big 12, and then you had several others went to Conference USA and whatever. They've all scattered and smothered and covered since then. But now they're in 3 different leagues. Rice now Conference USA, Texas obviously in the Big 12, and A&M now in the SEC. So brought back together here, that's going to be raucous, A&M. Yeah. That's just going to be a raucous regional. And the A&M Texas regional feels like this means a lot to Texas because A&M has eclipsed Texas on the football diamond with Johnny Manziel and all that stuff. But this is a big deal for Texas, I got to imagine. A big deal for Augie Garrido getting their team back to regionals. What's your take on this regional? It feels like this might be the other tough regional after it's in the top 5 for toughest field.
Certainly. And it's very compelling. I mean, obviously all the storylines, the fans, the intensity. I mean, it's going to be wild over there. As far as which teams I like, you know, it's a tough one to pick.
It is a tough one to pick.
Because you've got 3 teams here, and no offense to George Mason, but I think we got 3 teams here that could win it. I like Texas.
Okay, that's where I'm going. You read my mind.
Because, you know, first of all, I think they played well in the conference tournament. Their pitching, I think, is the best in this group.
There's not a big offensive team here that really threatens them. Sort of Rice with Ewing. A red Aquino. Hot, apparently, Aquino. Yeah. Had a good conference tournament, sound like, just following on Twitter.
Yeah, he looked good. He made a great defensive play yesterday, too. This ball where he reached over the railing on the left field line to make a catch.
Right.
And then threw on a line to the plate in time to get the runner, but the catcher couldn't hold on. That was a great play.
The scouts I've talked to have banged on him. But you look at this team, Aaron. This is the opposite of those other teams we were just talking about, how we were saying, I forget which team it was that. No, LSU. How they have 5-6 guys who can hurt you. Rice has 23 home runs as a team, 21 of them by Ewing, Aquino, and Reeves. So, to me, Texas is just not going to let those, or A&M, not going to let those guys beat you. If someone else doesn't step forward for Rice offensively, and Texas is used to not scoring runs. They're used to scoring runs to win in 2-1. I like Texas' pitching depth. I think they're the team that's most likely to come out of a loser's bracket and still win this series.
Yep.
I love Dylan Peters, the way he's finished the year, come back from that salivary duct. I've never heard of anyone having a stone in their salivary duct like Dylan Peters. I'm sure Dylan Peters and John Curtis both can tell me the algorithm, especially John Curtis. That guy's supposed to be a brainiac for Texas. I like their pitching depth. Obviously, I don't like their offense, but if you pick the best offensive player at the college level in this regional, it's probably Mark Payton. Probably Mark Payton. He's got a little pop. He draws a billion walks. He's got a good approach. I kind of like this Texas team. I don't love them. They're not an Omaha team for me, but I like them to win this regional.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know, the other thing about Rice that I'm concerned about, they've been riding Matt Dittman so hard in the bullpen.
He
pitched, this week a bunch. And
he throws strikes.
I saw they brought Lamon back for at least an inning in one of those games.
He did pitch once this weekend.
So maybe twice. Maybe he pitched twice out of the bullpen. He's back in the bullpen.
Okay, right. It's in a relief role. It's a dead arm, officially, is what they're calling it, and some arm soreness. Scouts don't exactly know what's going on there, but we do know that he threw on, the 2 days rest or 1 day's rest last year in the regional, and then he was extended again in the super regional, and then went from relief to, 7-8 inning starts.
I do think they have some other options here. This staff is deeper than maybe it used to be. I mean, Chase McDowell has pitched well down the stretch.
Right, he competes.
Certainly Blake Fox has had a fantastic year. A left-hander who, mixes 3 pitches and throws strikes. And Trevor Tackle, when he's on with his command, he's tough with that angle that he's got and the life on his fastball. But
they do have
some depth. He can lose his command in a hurry, as he did yesterday against UTSA.
They do have some depth there, and that does stand out. They do have some depth.
But I just think, like I said, I'm worried about how hard they've ridden Dittman.
How about A&M?
Is A&M
a factor here in your mind? It feels like A&M, I've had a hard time kind of pegging this year. I will say bon chance to Cray Bratson. I'm ready for the Cray Bratson experience to be. I've seen him on bureau lists for a long time now. One of the faster players in college baseball who never steals bases. But this is a team, Aaron, that just feels like kind of a funky team. Again, that's a grinder team, a team that they just have. I'm at a loss to explain how they've won games when the guys that we expected to be their leaders have not really had great years. Mengden's had the back issue. He's 4-8. I think we thought Parker Ray could be a guy this year. He hasn't had a great year. Jason Jester, I think there's a lot of high hopes for Jason Jester. He's kind of had a disastrous year.
But they still have arms. They have a lot of arms.
They
still
do have arms.
You know, they got Corey Ray. They got AJ Minter. They got Grayson Long. I mean, yeah. they still got a lot of guys that can run out there. Matt Kent, you know, Andrew Vincent, all these guys.
They're not at a loss for pitching.
They're not. And they're actually a pretty offensive team, too. I mean, Nick Banks, the freshman, has been a real key guy.
He's been huge. That guy's had a great year.
Cole Langford's had a nice year for them. You know, certainly Blake Alamon. I mean, they've got actually a lot of nice pieces. They're a fairly balanced team.
And I don't mean to knock Craig Bradson. He has 18 steals. He's only been caught once.
So. Well, there you go. Eat your words.
I am eating my words. 331 on base. Come on, Craig. Drop a bunt here or there. But
he's like the Tanner English of the
He is the Tanner English of the Southeastern Conference's West Division.
There you go.
Only less defensive than I believe.
But we're both taking the Longhorns.
We are.
Ultimately, although this
we
is compelling.
We didn't plan this out before, by the way. Baton Rouge, LSU the 1 seed, Houston the 2, Bryant the 3, Southeast Louisiana the 4 here. And the only thing we know for sure is that when this was announced, I boldly proclaimed that I will not be picking Bryant to win a regional in a second straight season.
You did proclaim that. certainly a good Bryant team. And, you know.
Pesky.
Clearly battle tested. They've been to a regional last year.
They won a game.
They beat Arkansas.
Or two, yeah. So.
Last year, they won 40 something games. I mean, a lot of experience, a lot of arms. They're going to be competitive. But, you know, Houston has a great pitching staff. Great pitching staff. Swinging the bats pretty well this week. You know, Justin Montemayor and those guys. You know, they got some big hits yesterday against Louisville.
Grayson, Casey Grayson, their senior fifth-year first baseman.
Absolutely.
This is a guy who just had a tremendous college season. And Aaron, what it sounds like with Houston is that one of the players that, like, this is going to be a column I do when he's in pro ball. Frankie Ratliff, their shortstop, second baseman. I think he's moved a little bit more to second, if I'm not mistaken, but haven't checked the box scores recently. But this is a guy who was arrested at Miami, had some serious baggage, was involved in steroid stuff at Miami, went to junior college. And, you know, I think you have to give Todd Whitting and Tripp Couch and that coaching staff credit for going out on a limb with this kid. And just talking to the scouts in South Texas about the Houston team for draft coverage, this is a guy who he's like the policeman of this team. And that's not ironic. He's the guy, he brings toughness to that team. He brings some grit, and he brings accountability to his teammates. He and Grayson both, it sounds like, really give that team some leadership. Again, I haven't watched this team. This is coming from the scouts I've talked to about Houston. And this is one of the things that stands out about that club, is they have some veteran guys. There's some young talent here that, like you said, the arms they have. West, and is it Lemoyne?
Yep. Lemoyne. Jake Lemoyne's very good.
So, I mean, he's a USA team we're going to see him this summer with college national team. So they've got pitching. That's their standout kind of tool. But they have some grit and some toughness with Grayson and Ratliff. That they're going to be a tough out.
Joshua Dallas at second base.
Another one. I can't pick them to beat LSU at Baton Rouge the way that they're playing. If Houston had been a regional host, I understand why they're not. You laid that case out very well. If they'd been a regional host, Houston would have been very dangerous to win. I think they would have been favored to win a regional because this team has some real intangibles that I really like.
Yeah, and if I'm LSU, I'm probably saving Noah for the second game.
Yeah, I think you have to.
I think Poche, you throw against Southeastern Louisiana. You know, LSU is just playing so well right now. I'm not picking against those guys. We've talked enough about LSU, but I think we're both taking the Tigers here.
I agree. But I'm compelled by that Houston team. I just think you got to give Todd Whitting and that coaching staff a ton of credit because it's something they were rewarded for going out on that limb with a player that was kind of toxic for a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
Tallahassee Regional, Aaron. Florida State.
Woo!
Alabama, Kennesaw State, and Georgia Southern are your four teams there. And some really intriguing teams, Aaron, because Georgia Southern got hot at the right time. And that could be a challenge for Florida State because they've got a lefty in Sam Howard who, when he's on his game, up to 93 from the left side with a good slide piece. It's not a great pitch, but that slider's really improved for him. So he was a fastball changeup guy before. Now he mixes in the slider. Kennesaw State, they've won 23 out of 24. Max Pentecost, I wouldn't say he's the best player in this regional because I love DJ Stewart, but he's pretty doggone good. He's the best draft pick in this regional. And then Alabama. I'm not on Alabama, but I do love their young talent. I like their competitiveness. They do have Turnbull and Cam playing, and they can pitch. They're battle-tested in the SEC. Florida State got a tough regional, Aaron.
They did. You're absolutely right. I mean, Georgia Southern, the Sam Howard point is a great point. And
I like that guy.
When he pitched against Western Carolina in the last season, last regular season start, he took a shutout into the ninth, struck out 10.
He was still up the 92, according to the guy I talked to. He was up the 92 in the ninth inning of that game. So this is a legit Friday arm that Florida State's probably going to get in its opener.
Yeah, and left-handed too.
Right. Perfect fit for that ballpark. You want to have a lefty in that ballpark if you can.
So, don't be shocked. Don't be shocked if Georgia Southern wins that game. And I don't know if Florida State has the pitching depth to run through the loser's bracket.
If they were healthy, Aaron, you'd say, yeah, they do. But they haven't been healthy down the stretch on the pitching staff.
So. And I'm still not banking on Brandon LeBrandt coming back this week without having talked to them in a week or so. LeBrandt and Holtman probably still won't be there. So I don't know. I mean, I know you're not as excited about Alabama.
I'm not.
And Alabama hasn't played well down the stretch.
But that said,
I still really like their team. I like all those sophomores. I feel like sometimes you'll see these sophomore-laden teams make runs in the postseason.
You will.
Mikey White's and Jordan, Georgia Salem's and these guys, Overstreet. I mean, all these players that are quality guys.
They are quality. I love their sophomore class. I mean, Wade Waz had a decent year for them. I know he's a sophomore, but they have some physicality there, too. I do wonder, this is a team that strikes out an awful lot here. I didn't realize just looking at their numbers, they strike out a lot, twice as often as they walk. That approach contrasting with Florida State's pretty glaringly in this regional.
Great point.
If they play each other, I mean, it's not just those two teams.
No, it's not. And Kennesaw State is red hot, as you pointed out. Red hot down the stretch here. They've only lost one game in their last, I don't know.
Stunning. Like 24. It's stunning. Wow. I think they're 23-1 in their last 24 games.
There you go. So, I mean, right now, Kennesaw State's the team that has the most momentum here. I don't know if I can quite bring myself to pick the Owls, though. I think Alabama, having played in this regional last year in Tallahassee, I think Georgia Southern wins the first game against Florida State with Sam Howard on the mound. I think Alabama wins the regional.
Wow, I'm picking Florida State. That's our first divergence. I can't go against the Seminoles. They're my preseason national championship pick.
And I like their team a lot, and I think they could get to Omaha and make noise, but the injuries...
You have a great point on the injuries of their pitching staff. They're going to have to probably pitch Luke Weaver on that Friday night game.
They better.
And they better hope that bad Sam Howard shows up. We're saying all this, and this is probably going to be printed out, put on a bulletin board somewhere, transcript.
Yeah.
For a transcript, email manbear@baseballamerica.com.
Nice.
But I will say Florida State's offensive approach will be tested if Sam Howard is on his game. Next one is Louisville, Aaron. Louisville's the one seed. This is like the NCAA basketball tournament regional. Louisville, Kentucky, Kansas, Kent State at number 4. Didn't Kent State get to like a Elite Eight a couple years ago in basketball? I feel like they did.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I thought they did.
I don't know how long ago that was, but that does ring a bell.
This is a good regional, though, for baseball as well. Kansas, I'm a little bit surprised Kansas is a 3-seed, but Kansas and Kentucky are just interchangeable for me, Aaron. These are just very streaky baseball teams, very streaky programs that just when you think they've turned a corner, neither of these are ever like 45-win, number one seed and host, or very rarely are they that kind of team. They're always in this 35 to 40 win mix. They're always 2 or 3 seeds. They're always pretty good, but they can't get over that hump. And now they play each other in a first round matchup. Louisville was on the edge as the number one, Aaron. I got to feel like if Kentucky can beat Kansas and Louisville beats Kent State, that's going to be an electric atmosphere for those two in-state rivals to go at it.
No doubt. And they always draw well when they play in the regular season. I'm very intrigued by that potential matchup, but I also think it's not... by any means a lock that's going to happen. I mean,
right.
Kent State's got a number one in Brian Clark, who's been around the block and who's pretty darn good. Firm stuff on the left side.
Firm stuff. It's just fun. I never shy away from an Olenberger inflection. So.
We appreciate that, too. And then Kansas, of course, went down with a sputter in the conference tournament. I wonder if they lost a little bit of that momentum when they, after they swept West Virginia, they step away, they go play two games at Michigan is kind of a tune-up.
Right.
Split them, and then they go to the Big 12 tournament and lose a pair. But I still think that team has, experience. They're very good defensively, especially up the middle. Justin Protasio, shortstop, is a good player, and Colby Wright at second base has been a real key for them.
What a shock, a Richie Price team that really knows how to skill it up defensively in the middle infield. You know?
Exactly right. And then a little bit of thump. That's the one difference with this team. They got a little more thump in the middle than usual.
Did you see them on your Midwest, on your Heartland trip?
I missed them. Okay. I missed them. I wanted to see him and couldn't squeeze him in. But you know, but then they also have three arms. I mean, Jordan Pichet and you know, Frank Duncan. I mean, they've got a pretty solid staff. Eldridge, I think, is the third guy or the second guy. So anyway, or Kahana, rather. Excuse me, Robert Kahana. I get my Hawaiian guys mixed
up. I was about to say, they've got a lot of Hawaiian guys over there in Kansas. So.
But I don't know. I mean, I think they're interesting. I think Kentucky looked great in the SEC tournament. I think they're back to playing well at the right time.
And Aaron, didn't we basically, I mean, like Louisville has had the resume of a top 10 fringe team all year. I feel like we never thought they were quite that good. You know, pole mechanics kind of kept Louisville a little bit higher on the rankings. And right when we were ready to drop them, they go to Houston and swept Houston. And Houston kept winning. And we had a real hard time justifying Louisville ever dropping behind them.
True.
It felt like they got a little artificially high in our rankings. I felt like we never had as much conviction about them as we had about some of the teams that were ranked behind them.
I agree with you, absolutely. But that said,
they have won 45 games.
And when you look at them, you know, you see a lot of familiar names from a lot of postseason games. You know, Sturgeon and Gibson and Gardner and Chittenden.
And Birdie.
Birdie and you know, Zach Lucas has been around a while. And Sutton Whiting. All these guys are veterans of Omaha.
Yeah.
And that matters. And
so, and their talent. They have talent.
They do have talent. All those guys I just talked about are good players, talented players.
And I wouldn't want to run into Kyle Funkhauser.
I don't know. I guess they'd probably throw Funkhauser in the first game.
I got to think you will. And, I mean, I got to think there are going to be a ton of scouts there to see Nick Birdie because you know you're going to see him over the weekend. They're guaranteed to see him in a regional. For me, Aaron, I'm picking Kentucky. I just think that they have A.J. Reed. I like the way they played in the SEC tournament, the way you wrote about their pitching coming back, getting some guys back to health. So they're a little bit deeper on the mound right now. I feel like Kentucky's been up and down. I've never really trusted that team. Be honest with you, I never really quite trusted Gary Henderson as a head coach. Just be totally brutally honest for no reason at all. But I'm picking him to win this regional. I just think it would be a mountainous change for this program to go into Louisville and win. And it just feels like all things being equal, and if I don't quite have 100% trust in that Louisville team, as good as I think they can be, I'm going to go with the SEC team even to win on the road.
And, you know, I think Gary Henderson deserves an awful lot of credit for the way he steered this team. And when they dipped, they came back.
That's it.
They had injuries to overcome.
That's it.
I feel like he's got his hand on the tiller pretty firmly here.
I feel like that's not what I expected in past years. I would have expected Kentucky to kind of, once things started going south. That's it. They folded last year. This year, they didn't fold. They kind of kept things, and it certainly helps to have the player of the year as dominant an individual player as we've seen in a while, as far as a two-way guy. And A.J. Reed. I mean, it's basically quasi-Chris Bryant at the plate. And then, oh, by the way, he's their Friday guy. That certainly goes a long way.
The problem is, I think you got to use A.J. in the first game. And I'm not going to bet against him in that first game against Kansas. You know, but if Louisville uses Funkhauser, I mean, you know, I'm not in love with the rest of those staffs. But I think I probably trust the rest of Louisville's pitching more than Kentucky's.
I think that's fair.
But, you know, that can be an offensive park sometimes. Kentucky could go in there and just really mash their way through. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm going to take the host. I'm going to take Louisville. I think all the experience I was talking about in Omaha, all that matters. And I like the pitching depth.
This is a very evenly matched regional. There's not a lot of difference here. If Kentucky basically changes two or three games on its resume, all of a sudden their resume looks like Vanderbilt's or South Carolina's.
You're right.
I mean, they played a very tough SEC schedule, and they acquitted themselves fairly well against it with a couple of just inexplicable home sweep to Ole Miss and a home series loss to Missouri.
Yeah.
If you turn that 1-5 into 4-2, they're probably hosting, Aaron.
Yep.
You know? Speaking of Vanderbilt, the Commodores hosting a regional with old friend Jack Leggett bringing Clemson in, Tim Corbin's old boss and mentor, with Oregon the 2 seed and Xavier the 4 seed. Kudos to Xavier winning the Big East tournament. What, on their second regional trip out ever for Xavier, for the Musketeers, I believe?
I think that's right.
And this is, seems like this has been a program kind of on the come, Aaron. Feels like Xavier always has a guy or two who can really pitch had a couple guys. Who was the Willoughby guy, the closer? Had the left-hander.
Danny Rosenbaum.
Danny Rosenbaum, the left-hander Thomas Shirley, who was like an 11th round pick.
Sure.
They've had some guys over the last couple of years. So this is not out of nowhere for Xavier, but they finally got over that hump into a regional. But Aaron, Clemson was certainly on the bubble, one of the last four in. And Oregon, this is not the Oregon team you usually think. Yes, they can skill it up. They've had all these injuries in their pitching staff with Irvin and Crook, the Tommy John surgeries. But now they're a little bit different. I'm already blanking on his name. Who's the catcher with the 12 home runs?
Sean Chase.
Sean Chase. All of a sudden, Oregon, of all teams, leads the Pac-12 in home runs as a team. And Sean Chase
how
has...
How many, do you know?
It's like I was 28 coming into the weekend.
Oh, what a powerhouse. 28
going into the weekend. Aaron, I wrote a lot of Pac-12 stuff this weekend. Let's look. Conference team statistics. It is 27 I was off. So, Oregon, I just think that because of Sean Chase, they're a little bit different than the Oregon you thought. Yes, they have to skill it up and all that, but they can win a game with a home run. Ryan Healy, my personal cheese ball for the Ducks, never sniffed 12 home runs, I don't think, Aaron. Maybe he had 8 one year.
Yeah.
This is an interesting regional. Vanderbilt should win this regional. Will they?
Yes.
You're banking on the Commodores.
I just think they're it's just so much talent there.
I can't pick against them here either.
I mean, there's just so much talent. And, you know, Oregon, without those two left-handers you talked about, hey, they've actually had a good year. I mean, I think I referred to yesterday, I said Clemson and Oregon are two top 15 preseason teams that have underachieved. Well, Clemson's underachieved. Oregon has actually done okay with the injuries it has had to win 42 games.
I think that's right. And it would go 18-12 in the Pac-12. I think that's right. I was a little bit shocked that they lost that series at the end of the year to Cal.
Yep.
But in general, I think Oregon, we've talked about them a lot on the podcast, is how they could beat the bad teams sure. And lost to the good teams.
Great matchup in that opener, though, with Tommy Thorpe against Daniel Gossett. I think, you know, traditional wisdom says you want to throw a good lefty against Clemson. So Thorpe, you know, maybe we won't even get to see that Vanderbilt-Clemson matchup in the second game. I don't know if Oregon wins that game. But Vanderbilt, I mean, yeah, Beattie's an X factor. You know,
he's an X factor for Vanderbilt.
He really is for Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
He's. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They can't make a deep run without Beattie being good. And I don't know if he's going to be or not. He's up and down. He was great, I thought, 2 weeks ago against South Carolina. Got off to a good start in the ACC tournament and then went in the tank. But that's also a 9:30 in the morning game. I mean, it's a little unusual. I believe in Fulmer. I believe in that team. We've talked a lot about that team. I still really like their team. I think they win that regional.
The best position player in this regional for me is still probably Dansby Swanson. They probably have him. I love Dansby
Swanson. Or Vince
Swanson.
Condi.
I know you love Vince Condi. I'm a Dansby Swanson guy.
Dansby's a great player.
So I'm going with Vandy.
It's a great middle infield.
It is a great middle infield. Honestly, I feel like Vanderbilt should be better than they are. I don't quite understand why they haven't just rolled some people this year.
Yeah.
I know they've played a tough schedule, Aaron. I get it. Maybe we're
there is a little. There is a little
standard.
Bit, you know. And I've talked to people around their program and watched a lot of those guys, and there's a feeling that maybe they lack a little bit of an it factor this year. You know that
a lot of complimentary players, no star, maybe. At least in the position players.
I mean, a few guys, you know, that they maybe thought would take big steps forward, like Xavier Turner, Rhett Wiseman,
Xander Wheel.
Xander Wheel has seemed like he's played better down the stretch, but I mean, those guys haven't become the stars maybe that they needed to become. Really, it's Condi and Swanson are the guys who are the leaders there. I don't know. There's some concerns with Vanderbilt, but there's still enough talent here that I think they win this regional.
I tell you, the other factor here is that is a clown ballpark. And you better be used to it. It could take some getting used to slide on that freaking turf and all the foul territory that does not exist there.
Funky angles in the walls and everything.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little funky bounce here or there. I'm picking Vanderbilt as well, but it's not with a ton of conviction.
Hmm.
It's not.
I have conviction.
You did. The Bloomington Regional area. Now, this is a team you had conviction in last year. At this podcast last year, you picked the Hoosiers to go all the way to Omaha. We got to go a little quicker here because we're running out of time. But Indiana the 1, Indiana State the 2, undeserved 2 seed. I think we both agree on that. For Indiana State?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know they have a two-seed RPI, 21 or something like that, but the rest of the resume. Finished second in the Missouri Valley. They went 0-2 in the conference tournament, 3-3 against top 50. I think it's a three-seed.
How is their resume any better than College of Charleston's?
Yeah, really. I mean...
Stanford, the 3-seed. Youngstown State, the 4. But to get out of the way here, I'm picking Indiana to win this regional.
Yes.
But Stanford is dangerous.
If you want to pick the Cardinal, pick the Cardinal,
John. I can't do it because I do have belief in Indiana.
All right.
Now, these are two teams that love to wear sleeveless, I mean, not sleeveless, V-neck T-shirts and 70s uniforms. So that's a battle of two of the worst uniforms in college baseball with Indiana and Stanford with the pullover V-neck. So that's an ugly factor. But I'm dismissing the Sycamores. I apologize for dismissing them. I'm dismissing the Sycamores in this. And I think Stanford's going to win that game. I'm going to tell you, Stanford's offense has some thump, Aaron. And you've got Zach Hoffpower, who you wrote about, the football player. He destroyed Utah this weekend with a sweep of his mighty paw. You got Slater. You got the coming on Wayne, is it Turner, the catcher? Mm-hmm. Wayne Taylor.
Taylor, yeah.
Catcher out of Houston. He's got all kinds of swing and miss, but this guy's got power. Wouldn't shock me if he ran into one. You got the great Blandino with 11 home runs. This team can hit. Stanford does not go out there and try to bunt you to death. They go in there to hit, and Cole Quantrill is legit. Cal Quantrill, thank you. A.J. Venegas is a legit closer who can be extended 2-3 innings if you need him. I like Major Hochstadter. I know he only throws 80 to 85 miles an hour, but he's had a great year. I'm not picking Stanford to win this regional because I think Indiana is that good. But I think if Stanford had gone to a different regional, I would have picked them.
Fair enough. I'm taking the Hoosiers. I need to keep it rolling here, but I think the Hoosiers waltz. I think this is the easiest regional.
So you're not on Stanford?
No.
Okay.
No, I think they're fine. They played well. You know, hey, you make some good points, but I just think they're meh. I'm not blown away. I'm not. I think Indiana is too good. They're playing at a really high level.
There's one more DeKroger coming, by the way.
So is there really a
third
one?
There's a third DeKroger. We'll see if he's the Stephen Drew of the family.
Danny's wound up having a nice career for them. I mean, you know, Kenny was getting all the expectations.
Kenny, yeah.
Danny is probably the
Danny's so far the best DeKroger.
Intangibles.
Danny's the better DeKroger of the two so far. We'll see about the third DeKroger. Gainesville, Aaron. Florida, Long Beach State, North Cackalack, College of Charleston. We've talked about the Cougars here. They've already won a series against North Carolina, but that was the first weekend of the season. North Carolina just kind of barely gets in. They really had a must-win game against Maryland in the ACC tournament where they blew a 5-run lead and then came back and won at 13-7. Long Beach State, kind of the feel-good of this regional, is Long Beach State, Aaron. The Dirtbags have been out of regionals for several years. Kudos to Troy Buckley bringing them back, and not just back, but as a two-seed. And this is an interesting team, Aaron. Two of the best freshmen in the country here, Logan Shore for Florida and Garrett Hampson, the shortstop for Long Beach State. Yeah. These are two of the best freshmen of the country, period.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And I'm happy for Long Beach. It's been a long road. And for a while, I mean, you know, they were below 500 team for a lot of this season, and they really need to get hot, and they did get hot.
They got hot when they needed to.
You know, and that'll be a nice matchup in the opener with Rohrbach against Trent Thornton, I imagine.
It's cool to see the Big West get four teams. Yep. They deserved it. There was a borderline fifth team for us in UC Santa Barbara.
Sure.
Would have been great if Santa Barbara had gotten in just, you know, as a fifth Big West team. But it's good to see that league being recognized for how strong it is again.
Yep.
But I feel for that to happen, Long Beach State had to be back to being Long Beach State.
It's
you know, their flagship program in that league.
They still are not a very offensive team.
Right.
Their numbers are actually worse offensively than they were last year, if you can believe that.
That's hard to believe. How does McKeithen Stadium play as far as...
It's offensive.
It's an offensive park. We'll see if a change of venue helps.
Maybe Richard Prigutano. I mean, he's got power, you know. I mean,
he's got nine extra base hits
there. Yeah. Yeah, I know it, but he's got power. It's in there. Maybe this weekend's coming up party for him. I don't know. I think Florida wins this regional, and you know, I don't think Florida is necessarily a juggernaut, but boy, they do a lot of little things well.
They don't have a hole either, though, Aaron.
So well coached. They don't... Well, I guess the hole is they only have one starter they can rely on to give them six innings. I mean, you know, it's like the Mississippi State model last year. That model worked really well. They made it to Omaha.
And you know what? Big kudos to Carson Whitson.
How about that?
How about good. Carson Whitson Sunday? He did look good. Everything was knees to ankles. He very rarely missed up. The slider was all right. It wasn't 2010 first-round pick stuff, but he competed. Got a ground ball whenever he needed it. Got the big ground ball in Savick in the sixth inning with the bases full.
If they need to go to a fourth game in a regional,
I was pretty happy for him.
They got so much pitching. I mean, all those lefties who throw strikes with the, you know, the pointers and the Danny Youngs. Those guys are all pretty
similar. Is Rhodes back for them? I have a Twitter question about Rhodes.
That's a good question. I don't have the answer. I didn't see him this week.
Where Florida's going, they don't need Rhodes.
Hey, automatic plus two.
Coral Gables regional. We're both picking the Gators, right?
Yes.
All right. Coral Gables regional, Miami, Texas Tech, the aforementioned Columbia Lions, Bethune-Cookman, Aaron, this seems like Miami got kind of a cakewalk. Texas Tech hasn't been to regionals in years. Kudos to Tim Tadlock for getting them back. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that their recruiting coordinator's name is J-Bob. But, you know, that doesn't seem like a serious threat to win this regional to Miami, is there? Like, does Texas Tech have, like, 20 right-handed hitters and no left-handed bats? Maybe that might make Texas Tech a, you know, real threat here?
Yeah. You know, Texas Tech can score some runs. I mean, they're just kind of a gritty team, one of those that doesn't have a lot of star power, but they grind you out a little bit. I think this is Miami's regional to win, you know, and not to give this regional a short shrift. We need to keep moving. But
we're going
to
give it short shrift.
We're going to give it short shrift. You know, Columbia was in a regional last year. I think I saw those guys in a regional at, what, Fullerton maybe?
I think you did. They went out west.
They got some experienced guys back.
But more Pete Falcone's son. What was his name?
Joey Falcone. I thought he was still there.
I thought he was like 80 years old or something like that.
Yeah, he's old, but he's underclassman, I think, last year. So.
I think actually that you're right. He provided a little. I remember he provided the pop and the feel-good story for Columbia.
That's right. But, you know, that's let's face it. It's an Ivy League team's a soft three seed. Texas Tech has had a really nice year. I don't really believe in them as an Omaha caliber club. I really like Miami's team. I'm picking them to win this game.
By the way, Joey Falcone is unfortunately 8-for-64 this year with 20 strikeouts. Oh. So it hasn't quite happened for Joey Falcone this year. I also am picking the Coral Gables hosts in Miami. WVUM, I'm sure, still carries the games down there. Love to listen to them in the summer of 91. Nice. I am old. Cal Poly Regional, Aaron. Baggett Stadium finally gets to host. I would love to call it Baguette Stadium because it would be, I'm sure it would smell great if it were Baguette Stadium. You got Cal Poly, Arizona State, Pepperdine, and Sacramento State fighting Riz Hoskins. This is kind of an interesting regional as well, Aaron. Yeah. You've got some offensive teams. You got Arizona State, which is really more of like a pitching one great closer and just very scrappy club. Tim Esme's done a nice job there. Another coach that I've banged on who's done a really nice job with this team. Again, a team that seems like it's gotten better over the course of the year. But I got to feel like Cal Poly, at its best, 45-10. Cal Poly feels like the class of this regional.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the only question for me is, will the layoff affect them at all? Because they didn't play at all this past week. They were off. And, you know, I wonder if that disrupted their rhythm at all. But I love Cal Poly's team. You know, I just think they have so much firepower and balance and the pitching. I think it's probably really benefits them that, hey, they got to rest up their pitchers who've used they've been used pretty heavily. I mean, you know, Inhofe and Reed Riley and Taylor Criss and all those guys.
So those top three guys carry the majority of the load. Yeah. So, yeah, Bloomquist, the other guy, who's had a tremendous season. So. Yep.
But, you know, Pepperdine has played well here down the stretch. They've had a great season. Some exciting freshmen. I watched their game yesterday, the West Coast Conference Championship game. Was it yesterday or Saturday?
I think it was Saturday.
You know, the freshman is shortstop. Manny Jefferson had a great game. Huge, you know, leaping catch to kind of turn the whole momentum of that game. And then I like their freshman catcher, Barnett. Those guys are fun to watch. I really like Aaron Brown on the mound and Corey Miller. They've got veterans. I think
the best player in the regional, this regional, is Aaron Brown.
Probably the most overall valuable player, yeah.
I mean, because he's really, it feels like he's gotten better. And I've been very high expectations on this guy for a couple of years as an eligible sophomore.
Yep.
Feels like that extra year as a junior, he turned a corner.
I agree with you. I don't know. I mean, I could see Pepperdine or Arizona State making some noise in this regional.
I agree. I could see any of those three top three seeds winning this regional.
And Sac State's got a solid number one in Brendan Lito, who they can throw out there in that opener. And they, you know, they've got experience. And, you know, it's not an easy four seed. But that said, I just really believe in Cal Poly, and I'm taking them.
I do, too. But it's a Western regional. Every time you see a regional in the West, that's why it's kind of stunning to see Oregon State be sort of
we always hear that, but
cakey.
Then,
this
but
one's
then,
pretty good.
We always hear about Western regionals. Anything can happen. But then how often do you see Fullerton win their home regional and UCLA win and kind of waltz through
good
UCLA
point.
Even, too? I mean, there's been a gap.
How about some extra kudos that this regional was not paired with Oregon State from a geography standpoint?
Yeah.
So the two West regionals, another common complaint, are not matched up this year.
I thought they would do it this way. I was hoping they would do it this way. I projected it this way, and that's what they did.
So just take note. Those of you who bitch and moan every year, take note. They didn't do any of the things that you say they do this year.
And you got West teams scattered all over the country.
Scattered all over.
That's what you always wanted, right?
One of the questions we have on Twitter is about Washington. And it's, you know, it's what do you guys think of Washington being shipped to Oxford and all these regionalized matchups? Didn't add up. I think that's one of the reasons why they did it, Aaron, is to not have all the West teams play each other. They've heard the complaints. They've responded. The Fort Worth Regional, Texas Christian, the number one seed, Dallas Baptist, Sam Houston State, and Tony Rossi's Siena.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember what Siena's nickname is.
The Saints.
See, and the crazy thing is, Aaron, I saw Siena in the regional the last time they went, led by speedster Todd Donovan. In 1999, they went to Winston-Salem and they played at Wake Forest.
Played there. That's awesome.
Absolutely, he was their best player. He was an 8th-round pick that year. But yeah, I know Todd Donovan's career inside and out.
Member of the 2005 Jacksonville Suns, exactly. Minor league player of the year, team of the year,
one of the best minor league teams the last 20 years. Matt Kemp on that team. Yeah. Anyway, Siena, good feel good story. They're going to get bounced. TCU. If it weren't for Kennesaw State, Aaron, we'd be talking about TCU as the hottest team in the country. What are they, 27 in the last 30?
Yep.
Something crazy like
that?
I mean, this has just been it felt like the last year and a half, a team that couldn't score, survived by their pitching, didn't survive enough last year. This year, that's even with their bell cow, their Friday ace, Brandon Finnegan, getting hurt. They have remained hot. They have not been moved off their path of dominance down the stretch. They win the Big 12 conference tournament. TCU feels like a juggernaut right now, Aaron. Are they a juggernaut, or are they just a really good team that got hot?
I love their team. I love their arms. I really like the fact that they're swinging the bats well, playing with a lot of confidence in every facet. I'm going to pick them to win this regional, but I will say that Dallas Baptist usually is a very offensive team, a lot of doubles and home runs. This team is built around pitching. They've got quality arms.
They do.
Cy Snead and Paul Welker and the Shaw kid, Joseph Shaw, who threw very well the other day. They got a bunch of arms here. I don't know. I mean, Dallas Baptist feels like they're well suited for this ballpark, which is a pitching ballpark. The wind blows in all the time. The ball didn't really carry there. Sam Houston State is a balanced team that's been in regionals before.
This is a tough regional field. I like Sam Houston State.
They were
Omaha sleeper preseason.
Yeah,
or no?
One of my preseason threats to win a regional. Last year they were down in Baton Rouge and played well there. They could make some noise here, but I just think TCU is too good. I am picking the Frogs.
I am too, but I'm tempted to pick Sam Houston State. But the thing is, they might lose that first game to Cy Snead and the Patriots. That's a tough regional.
Yep.
The geography did not do TCU any favors this year.
Great year in the state of Texas
for college baseball, but not for the draft. Terrible year for the draft. Epically bad year for the draft. And that includes on the college side. It's fascinating. Aaron, the Fit Matrix liked Louisiana Lafayette preseason. We had the Raging Cajuns 14th in the preseason. They finished the year number one in our rankings. It was not an easy choice because I think that we've talked to a lot of people about it this year. I think we both feel there's a pretty strong consensus out there among scouts and coaches that Oregon State and Virginia are the two most complete, most balanced, and well-coached teams out there. Those are the two favorites going into the tournament.
Even though we moved the Cavs way down to number 8 this week in our top 25.
We did. But Louisiana Lafayette enters at number 1. They're 53-7. But they've got last year's national runner-up, Mississippi State, as their 2 seed. San Diego State, which is playing very well, as their 3 seed. And Jackson State out of the SWAC as their 4. This feels like a very competitive regional down in Lafayette.
Agreed. Mississippi State is playing very well right now. You know, I like what I saw from them in Hoover. Certainly with Lindgren and Gentry and Holder in the bullpen, real separator. They're not going to go deep into the game, you know, with their starters. Same formula they used last year.
So right.
Ross Mitchell is now the one guy who goes deep, rather than last year it was Graveman.
Right.
But
who was like a 5 or 6 guy.
But you know. You know, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here on Mississippi State, but they are a good team. They're not nearly as offensive as Louisiana Lafayette. San Diego State has some balance and can swing the bats. I like the experience in their lineup. You know, these guys were in regionals last year, too.
Pretty impressive, actually, though, when you really think about it. That San Diego State, as a program, they were thought of as like a sleeping giant here, and they never went from 1992 to like Strasburg's year. They hadn't been to regionals for like 17 years.
That's right.
And now it's just like it happens, not every year, but like 3 out of the last 5.
Yep.
They've overcome the obviously the illness with Coach Gwynn. So John Pulaski, Coach Martinez down there, kudos to those guys for doing a really nice job. This has become a much more consistent program than it used to be. It used to be consistently mediocre or bad.
Yeah.
Now they're a consistent winner. That's not easy to do, and they have done it. I think they deserve some credit for that.
Bunch of good players in that team with Tim Zier and Greg Allen. And Brad Hanels had a big year hitting for power behind the plate. That's a team that could go into this park and hit some home runs. Maybe make some noise here. I think they're probably getting overlooked. Everyone's talking about the Cajuns and Mississippi State.
They got I know they have two really good pitchers. They have a number one in Bubba Derby, yep. who's a really good competitor, veteran, and they have a flame-throwing closer, though Nick Birdie of the West, and Michael Cedarov has got 20 saves and throws the hell out of the ball.
That's right. So does ULL, of course, with Reagan Bizarre.
Yeah.
Throws the hell out of the ball. I'm picking the Cajuns at home. You know I love the Cajuns. I believe in them. That's my pick.
I'm picking them as well, but I'll tell you what. That's a tough regional. For
yes,
a team that's a top eight national seed, that's a tough regional. They did not get any... There's no soft spot there in those top three seeds. Aaron, very quickly, and we'll probably have to pause while you take this radio show and finish up. Ole Miss hosting at Oxford as the one seed with UW, Washington Huskies, Georgia Tech, and Jacksonville State. I feel like Georgia Tech being a three seed is fair, Aaron, but at the same time, I thought winning the ACC Conference tournament and then some of the peaks on their resume would get them a number two seed. Obviously, it didn't, and there's no problem with that. The ACC was down this year. I don't feel like Georgia Tech's really a regional team this year, like a regional winning team. This is going to be a good team next year.
I'm with you on that. I agree completely. I would have had them as a two, but it was a borderline. They're fine
right.
as a three. Washington, I think is pretty good.
I agree.
I really do. I really think I've talked a lot about them this year, but I like their team. I think they're balanced. They do a lot of things well. They're very experienced all over the field. They play good defense, really take care of the baseball.
Right.
A bunch of pieces in the bullpen they trust with Troy Rawlings back there and Dunlap and a bunch of these guys that they can kind of piece it together with. They got three reliable starters. They do a lot of things well. I think Ole Miss is really good, though. I mean, I really do. I think they're one of the most complete and balanced teams in the country, certainly one of the most offensive teams in the country. Three really good starters. I was very impressed with Josh Laxter this weekend, which is a big X factor. If Laxter's going well, along with Greenwood, that's a great 1-2 punch in the bullpen. They're athletic. I'm taking Ole Miss at home. Great home field advantage, too.
I'm taking Ole Miss at home, too. I will tell you what. I like that Washington team for all the same reasons you said. I came very close to picking them. I just feel like Ole Miss is just too physical. Another coach who came in the year on the hot seat.
Yeah.
And Mike Bianco, and they just did a tremendous job with this team this year after really faltering down the stretch last year.
Yep.
Below 500 for the second half of the year. That's not what they did this year. Quickly, we will just talk about the Columbia Regional, South Carolina the 1, Maryland the 2, Old Dominion the 3, Campbell the 4. I guess there's some storylines here in a way. And then you got Old Dominion, formerly coached by Jerry Myers. Now he's the pitching coach again at South Carolina. Aaron, we have a question on Twitter. If Connor Bright and Max Schrock are healthy, do you think that South Carolina can win that regional and maybe beat Virginia the next week in a super? Was the question from James Gilliam. We're jumping ahead of ourselves a bit.
They're going to win the regional because South Carolina doesn't lose home regionals, period.
They don't.
Period. And Maryland, I think, is a little bit dangerous.
Great feel-good story. Great job by John Sheff. First regional since 1971.
Pretty awesome. And they've got two big-time arms with Stinnett and Showerin, and they could definitely win a couple of games there.
I never know how to pronounce Showerin's name, so I'm glad you did.
I hope I said it right. I've been saying it that way all year. But Campbell, great story to get in here after last year's heartbreak, but they lost a lot off of last year's team. They still won 40 games, but they're not as good as they were last year.
Right.
Old Dominion is a pretty physical, balanced team. You've talked about them on the podcast before.
Yep.
South Carolina's the best team. They're at home. They win this regional. I don't think they beat Virginia. Virginia's going to win its regional.
Virginia, I'm thinking them as well.
Virginia is still the team. Not to rush through these too much, but Virginia is still the team that I still think is the best team out there. I think they're going to rediscover their form here in the postseason. The fans are going to pack Charlottesville. They got a great home field advantage there. I think they get a little mojo going. Arkansas, to me, is dangerous if healthy.
Right.
Jalen Beeks is a big factor here. Even without him,
not been healthy.
Yeah, even without him, you've still got Chris Oliver, and you've still got Trey Killian, and you've still got arms. And the bullpen,
they always have arms.
They always have arms.
Unbelievable. Consistency for that program, for Van Horn and Jorn to develop power arms. They recruit them, they bring them in, they're really good at it.
And they impressed me with the way they grinded it out this weekend, too. Even games that didn't even mean anything for them. They were kind of locked in as probably a two seed. They were down a bunch of runs. They came back. I think it was a 6-0 deficit. They overcame one of those games. Unless I'm getting my games confused. It all ran together a little bit.
Sure.
But
this is a team, Aaron. They're hitting .263. I mean, .263, .353, .355. It's just not a real offensive club.
No.
.355, you're looking at really .380, .390 if you're an offensive club these days.
Yep.
They're just not a great offensive club. You know, so I think they can be pitched to. I think Virginia can pitch to anybody. They can definitely pitch to those teams. Liberty, a 3 seed, Aaron, boy, 2 weeks ago, Liberty looked like it could be a number one and a host, or number two and a host. Now they're a 3 seed.
Finished with a sputter, and I had them as a borderline 2 or 3, one of my last 2 seeds, so I'm not surprised they wound up as a 3. Yeah, I mean, Liberty's pretty good. I mean, they're a pretty offensive team, enough on the mound to be competitive here, but Virginia's just at a different level. You know, I'm taking Virginia, and I'm taking Virginia to go Omaha.
I'm taking Florida State to go to Omaha. I'm taking Virginia in that regional as well. We will revisit these picks next week of who we're picking to get to Omaha. We don't have time
reel off the names real quick.
Me, it's Oregon State over Cal State Fullerton in that super regional, but that's going to be very tough.
Oregon
I'm picking
State,
the Ballers.
I'm also taking the Beavers.
Texas LSU, I'm taking LSU there.
LSU.
I know I'm going some chalk. You have Alabama and U of L. I have Florida State and Kentucky. I'm picking my preseason pick, Florida State.
I'm taking Alabama.
You love Alabama.
Omaha sleeper.
Vanderbilt, Indiana, I'm taking Indiana.
Hoosiers.
Florida, Miami, I'm taking the Gators.
Hurricanes for me, Miami.
Wow, upset city. Cal Poly, TCU, I'm picking Poly.
TCU.
All right, and then Lafayette, Ole Miss, I'm taking Lafayette.
Lafayette for me, too. And I'll take Virginia to win it all over Oregon State. 1-2 match. Now, I'm going to change that. Virginia over Indiana.
Virginia over Indiana, I'm taking Florida State over Virginia in an all-ACC final. Call me crazy. Aaron's got to bounce. We want you to visit DeMarini.com to see the 2014 lineup of DeMarini BB Corps bats, including the aforementioned CF6 with D-Fusion handle technology. Visit DeMarini.com. He's Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. That was a lot of fun. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, John.
We'll see you guys on the next Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.